You're listening to Off the Record. I'm Brian Wise, and I'm at the Americana Music Festival and Conference in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Soundstage Recording Studios. And it's my great pleasure to introduce to you Gillian Welsh and David Rawlings, who are here and who won a Lifetime Achievement Award the other night at the Americana Awards, which seems wrong because you seem to have most of your career ahead of you.
We didn't know if it was a subtle way of telling us we should stop.
Yeah.
I was wondering.
You've done enough.
Yeah, enough already.
Yeah. There's plenty of years ahead of you. And look, it's terrific that you're able to come in because, Dave, you've got an album out as the David Rawlings Machine, which we'll talk about in a moment. The last time we met was backstage at the Buffalo Springfield gig at the Fox Theatre in Oakland.
Which was the first show of that little run they did. I think they did 7 shows that we opened.
And fantastic shows.
Yeah, oh, that was an incredible experience to see that them reform and, you know, in a way play probably some of the best shows they ever played in that arrangement. Being probably closer to, I mean, I think the last time that band was together, they'd been in sort of their early 20s.
True. It was interesting to see the audience reaction to you, because, you know, most of them were, you know, my vintage, mature age. Maybe they hadn't heard of you before, but I tell you what, you won the audience over really quickly and people were so impressed. But what I do want to ask you, I'm sure there are a few people here who also want to know, when are you going back to Australia?
We actually are thinking
in the
spring.
Yeah.
Early next year.
Fantastic. Because it's been 10 years.
Yeah, we try to do things on a sort of
10 to 14 year cycle.
And people still talk about those gigs.
That was a great tour. We had a blast when we were down there.
They were kind of legendary gigs, weren't they?
Well, I guess we gave them enough time to acquire that sort of...
As I said, you won a Lifetime Achievement Award for songwriting. You don't make many records, though. This is your 7th album together.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like fine wine, isn't it? You wait for it to come out and it's always good, but you can't rush it.
I think that part of that has to do with, you know, it's funny, with the earliest records that Gillian made, we were sort of more on I think the first one came out in 96 and the second one came out in 98. And after that, you know, after we became independent and we weren't on a record label anymore, but it started our own label and maybe built our own recording studio and started sort of taking on all of the other jobs that it used to be that in the music industry other people did. Mm. And, you know, when you compound doing all those jobs with also touring the world or certainly touring, you know, for years at a time, I think that that has slowed down music production kind of in everyone's sphere, you know, or in most people's spheres who are independent. Because there, you know, it used to be, I suppose, you finished a record and there had been an art department who were working on the cover and a press department that were working on these things, and you handed it in and they said, okay, you're going to go play 14 shows and then you're going to start writing songs again. And that hasn't been, you know, the world of music for quite a while. And also, we just write really slow.
But, you know, there is some trade-off for it. I mean, even though, you know, all the changes that happened when we started our own label, we do have more artistic control, you know. In fact, you couldn't have more artistic control than we have over our records. And, you know, every photograph that goes onto the album, you know, package and the whole deal. So.
Well, it works for some people, obviously, for you.
Yeah.
Some people need a bit more impetus in their careers, don't they? But you're right, the day of the album a year are long gone.
Yeah, I mean, and they could come back. It would just involve, you know, there being a music industry again.
Well, tell us... a different sort of music industry, yeah.
Right.
Tell us about the David Rawlings Machine and how that's different to the other format.
Well, I'm really excited about this new Dave Rawlings Machine record that is out today. It's kind of the first Dave Rawlings Machine record that we made the way we make Gillian Welch records. In other words, it is technically Dave's second record, you know, A Friend of a Friend, and now Nashville Obsolete. But A Friend of a Friend was almost more of a collection of songs that Dave had penned with myself, but with other writers as well. With Ketch Secor from the old Cro-Medicine show, with Ryan Adams, you know, it was, what did you say, Dave? It was like a greatest hits.
For a bunch of records that never got made.
Yeah.
and not as the greatest hits because it was good, but just it had that flavor of a compilation, just some things that had been played over the years. And this record has more of a cohesive, it was written over, you know, in a focused period of time, sort of, and seems to address, you know, the themes that are within one song sort of flow into another song, and hopefully it has, you know, some continuity there that people will enjoy.
It's a lot sparser, as you said, than the last record.
Right, that's true.
That's kind of more to our taste.
Yeah.
You know, it is closer to what we do, you know, most of the time. And yet, one of the great things about putting out records as the Dave Rawlings Machine is it affords us the chance to do different things.
Yeah, have different sorts of arrangements. I mean, we had initially...
To use strings, for instance.
Right, yeah, we put some strings on this. We were thinking initially to just do it as a trio record with Paul Cowart playing bass, and started out recording that way, and then gradually, you know, found some of the songs called for a little more, you know, sweetening to sort of surround the thing that is my voice. But yeah, that's where we ended up.
You recorded at your studio.
Correct.
You moved to Nashville some time ago and you bought a studio, didn't you?
Yeah, we've been here over 20 years now, and somewhere in the middle of that time, when long before the boom that is now Nashville happened, there was a long period of bust, I suppose. Yeah. And in the middle of that time period, a lot of the large recording studios were for sale. And we ended up buying one of the old ones that are on the east side of town. It's funny, this complex here is part of, we recorded some of our second record here.
Yeah, we when we walked in, realized we had cut I'm Not Afraid to Die and My Morphine for the second record.
Over in the other room here?
At this soundstage,
yeah. When it was still Millsaps.
When it was Ronnie Millsaps, yeah.
I should tell people they're listening to Off the Record. I'm Brian Wise. I'm in Nashville at the Americana Music Festival and Conference. I'm with Gillian Welch and David Rawlings. And you were talking about Nashville. I don't think I've ever seen a city with so much construction work in it.
Isn't it incredible?
There
are huge construction cranes dotting the skyline everywhere.
Yeah, I kind of think that the cranes, you know, they should just stay. They've been here for so many years. I don't know. They just must shuffle them around.
Is this a good or a bad thing from your point of view? Having been,
I mean, before? I don't know if it's good, bad, or indifferent. I don't know that it's any, you know, any one person's to judge. I mean, you know, there's things about it that are nice to see the city grow, and then there's things that you see get torn down that you don't want to see go. So I think, like everything, there's a couple sides to that coin.
Mm.
There's a lot of really good food in town now. A lot of great chefs have moved here.
And some more venues, too. I know.
That's true.
And some more venues.
So yeah, that's the upside.
We're playing one of the new ones tomorrow. There was a great field down by the river, and they were doing shows down there, and people liked it enough they've turned it into a permanent amphitheater. So.
Well, it certainly is a happening town, that's for sure. Let's talk about the recording of the album. We should talk about the title first, Nashville Obsolete. Now, that has a lot of connotations, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, that's why we liked it as a title. I mean, it came out of something sort of whimsical. It was just a lot of the way that we record records and the equipment that we use and the studio. I mean, recording studios in their way are fairly obsolete in and of themselves, never mind the equipment that's 50 years old that's around. You know, we're forever having to figure out some way to remachine some little part or, you know, do something to keep things running. So we had thought at some point there's a little basement space we don't use, and we thought, oh, we should open a little shop down there called Nashville Obsolete, and we should just, you know, sell things that no one needs, you know, typewriter ribbons or buggy whips or little tiny retaining clips.
Cassette tapes.
Yeah, exactly. And have it just be all mail order, you know, send out catalogs like they used to.
No internet presence at all. Just street address, you know, mail order.
So once in a while when something would happen, we go, oh, we got to remember, put that on a list to sell at Nashville Obsolete. And so the phrase...
I've got a list going, yeah.
Yeah.
I got a list in my pocket.
Oh, well, let's see. We can...
What's on the list?
Okay. Give me a second on my device here.
I suppose these days you could make things with 3D printers if you ran out of stock.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, you could just...
Roller blind, pulls, videotape, cassettes, dyno tape, typewriter ribbon, paper packing tape. A lot of tape, you might notice.
Yeah.
Very into tape. 45 inserts, tubes, tweakers, newspapers, pencils, pencil sharpeners, carbon paper, printed service manuals, file folders, Rolodex cards, overhead projector bulbs, rubber stamps.
Okay.
You left out Betamax.
Yeah, there you
Betamax.
Go.
Betamax. Please, if you have anything to add to our list, I still want to open this store.
Well, and, the cover of the album along with the title.
With the tin type, yeah. And I mean, so we just started, and also, I mean, it spoke to a little bit of the change in Nashville. It spoke to, I mean, the word obsolete rings well with the word machine. It speaks to feeling like we've been doing this long enough that we may, in our, you know, be obsolete ourselves and not being sure about that. So I don't know, I liked the way it connected.
It's also, it addresses, you know, the whole music world, the whole music industry is in a precariously obsolete position right now, in a way,
yeah.
You know.
So.
Well, it's interesting that there's an interesting juxtaposition between the word obsolete and the fact that the music you make, most people would say, is timeless.
It was obsolete to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something, we had a conversation yesterday about that word, and, you know, some things... What was the... You had a point about sort of obsolescence.
I see a connection between obsolescence and perfection. You know, in other words, if... because we were talking about this. For instance, there was an old tape dispenser made for dispensing paper packing
tape.
I'm sorry. My mind revolves around tape. And R. Crumb made this tape dispenser quite famous. People knew he was crazy about this thing. It weighs about 50 pounds. It's made of cast iron. It's perfect. It will never break. This is the only paper tape dispenser you will ever need in your life. But it's also completely obsolete, though it's perfect, you know, and a very green product. It dispenses paper tape, no use of plastics or, you know, it's a plant-based adhesive, you know. So
plant-based adhesive,
all that to
ladies
say,
and gentlemen.
There is... This idea of obsolescence and perfection, they rub right up against each other.
Have you got one of those dispensers?
I do not, but I hope to someday.
Maybe someone
can aspire to that.
Right. Well, obviously you record on tape.
That's right, which is
yes.
Quite obsolete.
And is it hard to find these days?
Well, I sometimes have reasonably good powers of prognostication, and before tape disappeared, there was a company that we used their audio tape, and I kind of figured that they would go out of business at some point. So towards the end, when the quality got a little spotty, I said, well, next time you guys make a batch, send up a reel and I'll test it out, and if I like it, I'll buy a lot. So we ended up buying a huge amount. We had gone on tour a couple times, and we sort of took out a loan and just bought a lot of audio tape and put it in a vault. And we're still working through it, but well, there's not a lot left.
A lot of people would say they can tell the difference between vinyl and a CD. Can you tell the difference between recording on, say, Pro Tools and recording on tape?
Oh, there's an enormous difference.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's a completely different sound.
It's to the point where I can't even stand working, hearing what we do off Pro Tools. It's very rare for us to be recorded that way, but every now and again, someone will ask us to contribute to a project, and it never does that magical thing where it takes what you did and turn it into art. For me, there's some sound I'm looking for. I'm waiting for that magic moment when it comes back, magnetized, and that never happens.
Yeah, there's just a basic, if you're working on a tape machine, there's a button you can press where you can hear the audio going through it. And you're not listening to it recorded on tape. You're just listening through the machine. And then there's another button you can press where all of a sudden you hear what you did coming back off the tape. And I wish we had an example. I wish we were sitting there and you could hear, like, okay, this is what we call input. This is what we did. And you'd be like, oh, that sounds nice. And then this is it coming back off of tape. And you'd go, oh, that sounds like a record that I'd like to listen to for a long time. And it's amazing when you work digitally. I mean, there's a lot of ways. People make great records digitally. I just don't know how. But the fact is, you know, when you do that, when you don't have that little step.
That moment. That little...
Well, I can kind of understand now why your albums take so long to come out. You're listening to Off the Record. I'm Brian Wise. I'm in Nashville at the Americana Music Festival and Conference. Have you had a chance to see any of the other music here? Because you performed the other night at the awards, which was great.
I saw the performers on the awards, of course. Mm. It was great to hear Ricky Skaggs and Ry Cooder, and I was so excited to hear Buffy St. Marie. Got out for a little bit last night, heard some folks down at the Mercy Lounge. I'm planning to head down to the Station Inn, a beloved venue where Dave and I used to play a lot. We're going down there tonight.
Yeah, we're going to go see Willie Watson tonight. And it's a little tough because we've been doing a lot of talking during the day and have the show on Saturday to sort of run around as much as I normally would.
Well, I won't keep you too much longer.
But oh, no.
No, it's okay. We've saved ourselves up for this.
Yes, exactly. So we saved ourselves for you. Oh,
fantastic. I want to ask you about a couple of the songs on the album. And I'm sure I've heard some of them before in your performance. Maybe Candy and I think The Last Pharaoh as well.
No, Candy's the only thing Candy. That was around for a little bit of time.
Right.
That got written sort of on stage at during one of the Machine tours. So that's the oldest song on there.
If you think you've heard Pharaoh, it's just because it's a song that sounds like you've heard it before.
You're right. Probably.
That was a very fun one to cut. I got to, used to see Johnny Cash play, and he did this trick with his guitar where he would turn his guitar into more of a snare drum. He'd weave a dollar bill through his strings, and it would get that that feeling. And I did that on Pharaoh. I got a hamburger receipt woven through my strings on that one, and it's a neat little trick. If anyone's wondering, you know, they hear the record and wondering what is that.
I'm sure
that's what that is.
Many people are going to be emulating that almost immediately.
Oh, well, I give it to you freely. I stole that from Johnny Cash, so take it.
You performed the other night one of a very amusing song from the album, Short-Haired Woman Blues. Dave, can you tell us about that?
Well, that song was, we had started writing that a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And it didn't have that title, and it sort of had a slightly different slant to it.
It was a little bit more about the ponies and a little bit less about the short-haired woman. And then it became more and more about the short-haired woman.
You know, then we'd sort of thought about the story and the things that sort of connected to it and where the story was coming from. All of a sudden, we were working on a last verse, and those words kind of spilled out. And I'd been familiar. There's a Lightnin' Hopkins song that Townes Van Zandt covered called Short-Haired Woman Blues. So the title, I always known as a title, and I always thought it was a very funny title. And I also thought it was a very funny song, the song that Lightnin' wrote. Because you can't really tell why he has any problem with short-haired women. I did find out recently, one of the things he says, I don't want no woman with hair no longer than mine, nothing but bad luck and trouble, have you buying rats all the time. And I just thought, well, that's strange.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And I found out recently that there was something called a hair rat that you would put up like under a wig to make your hair do a little taller.
Or under your own hair.
Right.
Put it under your own hair to make it certain hairdos if you want a little height or, you know, your bangs. That 40s look where the woman's bangs kind of poof out. they would often have a rat under the bangs.
So this is something we'll probably be selling at Nashville Obsolete.
I'd say so.
Gross.
I'd say that would be a certainty.
Yes. But I always liked in that song that there was a sort of a truth to, you know, people who have this experience with a person who then make sort of generalizations or just be like, you know, I don't mess with those, you know, I don't mess with short-haired women anymore. They're trouble, you know, even
well,
though
like
it doesn't
people
make...
say, no, not the redheads.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I thought that there was, you know, I've had that experience like that in my life, so I thought it was good to try to fit it in there. And, you know, and then I was a little nervous about it. When we first played it, we actually did play it on a couple little pop-up shows. Mm-hmm. We played that out live. And I thought, man, people are going to be mad about this. Like, someone's going to come up after the show and with short hair and be like, what? And Laura, who LT, who sells our merch and works at our label, who is at the show, she has short hair herself, but... But a bunch of other people came up and she's like, oh no, the short-haired women love this song. So I thought, oh, well, that's good. That shows you how much I know about anything.
Yeah.
And finally, there is, of course, an epic track on the album, The Trip. There has to be an epic, doesn't there?
The Trip.
Well, there turned out there was one. I don't know if they're necessary, but we do like long songs sometimes. I don't know. You want to talk about that one for a minute?
I love getting to write a story, you know, a lyric that isn't necessarily linear. I like the way The Trip functions and that it just starts to gang up kind of like a snowball. It just gets bigger and bigger. At least that's my hope. If people like the song and if it is successful, it just kind of gains weight and you know, by the end of the song, hopefully it seems to have said something.
Yeah, I wanted something that had a sort of hypnotic quality that kept moving forward, and it had a feel that was not unlike a... there's a Bob Dylan song called Billy that we used to play sometimes that sort of had chords like that and had that feeling. And yeah, I like to have something that can sort of move through a number of moods, and then hopefully, you know, I mean, I was really glad that as we cut it, the day that we cut it with Brittany Haas playing fiddle and Jordan playing mandolin, Paul, who was on bass, and Gil and I had tried to cut it a few times as a trio, and we thought, well, we probably need to try this with a few other instruments, and it was great when we
couldn't quite get lift off.
Yeah, we got done, and we were like, well, that was 11 minutes, and they didn't think that it was. They were like, really?
They had no
idea. Short. So I was like, oh, maybe that's a good sign. Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Congratulations on the album.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm really looking forward to hearing that song in concert if you do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's going to be a Gillian Welsh, David Rawlings tour or a David Rawlings machine tour in Australia or both?
The cards are still being shuffled, mm-hmm. but hopefully we get to do some shows in both iterations. That would be nice for
hopefully
us
both.
And hopefully for the people.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you for having
thank
me.
You.
What song would you like to finish off with in the album? I played Candy earlier in the show, so is there another one? I haven't got time to play The Trip. I'll play that next week.
Okay, I mean, you could play The Weeknd.
Why don't you
the first
play
one.
Play The Weeknd. Okay, perfect.
That's a good way to go out.
Fantastic. We'll be back after The Weeknd by the David Rawlings Machine. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you.
Here you
go. I hit The Weeknd just like a freight. I got there early, I couldn't wait. I made a friend or two along the way. You want the details, what can I say? There's the ballerina, the foreign cartel, the opera singer, the southern